Done with frizz? Say goodbye to that poof. Repel humidity and tame those flyaways. One drop, frizz stops with John Frieda Frizzy Serum. Your hair talks and frizz never interrupts. John Frieda Frizzy Serum. One drop, frizz stops.
Only from John Frieda.
Want to make your blonde blonde? Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection by John Frieda lightens and brightens hair two full shades to give you your best blonde every day. Your hair talks. Make a statement with Sheer Blonde Go Blonder Collection. Only from John Frieda.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into this edition of Locked On Grizzlies here on the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Peter Edmiston. You can follow me on Twitter at Peter Edmiston. Thank you for downloading the pod and making it part of your life in some small way or some large way. I'm not going to judge you how you listen to the pod. Like some people are trying to do. I'm not that kind of guy. So you make it a part of your life however you do. I'm just glad that you're doing it. I'm excited because I get a chance to talk to my pal Kevin Leip again. He becomes the first two-time guest on Locked On Grizzlies, which is that's an honor that can never be taken away from you. Kevin Leip, who is at Flyer Grizz Blog, by the way, and writes, of course, for the Memphis Flyer cover story this week with the Tigers and the Grizzlies on your Memphis Flyer for those of you in Memphis to go and get that. Kevin, but this must be the greatest honor of your life. So I feel like you should, you know, you okay? Are you getting emotional in this?
Well, I had so much champagne beforehand that, you know, I'm in the zone now.
That's how we like to do. I like all the guests to be nice and liquored up before we really get down to brass tacks. I find that it makes the discussions a lot more fun.
It was hard to get the champagne through security, but I managed.
Ooh, well, see, now you're speaking my language. We're going to be into this. We're going to get down because this has been an interesting start to the season. And full disclosure, we're taping this just before the game against the Pelicans on Wednesday night. So God forbid something insane happened during that game. We will not be talking about it. And you might be wondering why. Well, that would explain why. But assuming that doesn't happen, your impressions of what you've seen so far from this team, and let's leave out the rest game for a moment against Minnesota. We can talk about that in a second. But in the fully competitive portion of the season thus far, what are the things you've liked? What are the things that have concerned you?
You know, there's a lot of both. I don't think the offense is maybe as drastically different as I expected it to be, but that they're clearly generating better looks at the basket. They're shooting better, and it's a lot of the same guys are shooting better, so you can tell that it's a function of getting better looks, which is exciting to me because I've kind of been banging that drum for years that the offense that they were running just didn't – the reason shooters came here and got worse is because of the offense. It wasn't because they were magically eating too much barbecue, you know. So that's been encouraging. I mean, I think the defense is obviously a problem. This is – as much as Fizdale – says that they hang their hat on their defensive identity, they just don't have one right now. I'm not completely convinced that they have the personnel to run the Heat style defense that he's trying to run. I think we're going to find that out pretty quickly if they don't. But you know, just interior, especially in the interior, they're just wide open. It's the pick and roll defense leaves a lot to be desired right now, and they're going to get destroyed if they don't straighten that out. You know, I do like that Conley and Gasol have been so aggressive. I wish some other people could get it going a little bit. I do think James Ennis has been pretty impressive as a two-way player. Not impressive enough that you're going to start him over Chandler Parsons when/if Parsons comes back ever, you know, at this point. But
right around the corner. I mean, that corner continues to be right there. It is so close.
You know, that was – hopefully, listeners, that was – I do think he's going to come back at some point.
As do I.
You know, but that said, I think Ennis has proved himself to be a good quality rotation player, something that, you know, we didn't know last year when he was getting waived for Ryan Hollins and not playing and whatever else. You know, yeah, I suspected it, but it's been good to be proven right there. Andrew Harrison is still getting too many minutes. I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt after that first game, but he just doesn't he hasn't shown me anything. You know, he picks up his dribble. He moves slowly. He doesn't seem to know what to do other than try to get to the rim, and he's not great at that. He's starting to get better at drawing contact, but I'm not sure that he has the makings of a 30-minute-a-night player, and I don't know that Fizdale just feels like he has to have them out there because he's sort of a credible defender or what, but I don't think that experiment's working. So, but there's a lot of stuff going on this year. I mean, it's been really interesting to get into these games.
That's why I think it's been a fascinating start to the season. Yeah, you know, even you know, and then the whole discussion about you know resting players and minutes restrictions and all that is itself a separate and fascinating discussion about the maintenance of this team and what they have to do. But you know, in the competitive portion of the season so far, and Tony Allen should be back by the time you hear this. He will start. We're talking about this before the game, but he's going to start for the Pelicans in the Pelicans game. So that's a good sign going forward, and that will likely limit some of those Andrew Harrison minutes that you're talking about. I've been probably most shocked, I guess, by the fact that Vince Carter's probably been their most effective player. I mean, if you take everything into account and what he's done, he's certainly the best plus minus player, best net rating on the team. He's made 3-point shots. He's played excellent defense. You know, he shut down Andrew Wiggins in the opener, which was a key to you know making sure that they could eke out a win. I mean, I didn't expect that. I didn't see that coming. But I think he's been the best we've seen since his final year in Dallas.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. He finally looks like the player that we thought the Grizzlies were getting three summers ago. He looks like he's in good condition. You know, I don't know that he's doing anything that he wasn't trying to do previously. It just looks like his body has finally caught up, and he's kind of feeling well, and he's shooting the ball really well right now. It's pretty impressive.
I mean, it's scary.
Yeah, he was like 5 for 6 against Washington the other night, all 3-pointers.
That sixth one was just a heat check. I mean, he was 5 for 5, and then he just threw one up just for the hell of it.
Yeah, because he's Vince Carter. Why not? Yeah. I would too. You know, I think he's playing great, and you know, I hope that doesn't get into a situation where the coach feels like he's got to use Vince Carter as a safety blanket, you know, and play him too many minutes because that's going to wear him down. I mean, he's literally the oldest player in the NBA. But yeah, I think absolutely what he's been able to give the team so far has been really impressive. And I wasn't expecting it. You know, I think I and a lot of other Grizzlies the commentariat had kind of written him off, just because he's struggled so much to find his place the last couple of years. I don't know exactly what it is that's got him playing so much better this year other than just condition, but he's taking a big leap.
How do you rank the non-Mark, non-Zach bigs thus far?
Jamichael Green is kind of – I don't think he's anything that we didn't already know he is. Spot minute, hustle play, effort kind of guy. He's never going to be a big scorer. He's never going to be – he's obviously never going to be a very good defender without fouling. He just still gets in foul trouble. Gosh, I don't know in terms of ranking because you wish Brandon Wright were in that rotation. I hope he plays. That would be nice. After
honestly, the ankle injury he's got is historically a weird one, and I will warn Grizzly fans that it is one that can be like a difficult one to overcome. Without just a lot of time and rest and all that stuff, it's one that leads to a lot of weird conditions in the foot if it's not managed. It's just an unfortunate injury for a basketball player to get.
I don't even know what the injury is. I mean,
it's the tendon that connects the calf muscle to the foot bones, the bottom. So if that tendon fails, then it leads to, if you see people with flat feet, onset flat feet as adults, that's why that tendon has failed and the arch of the foot falls. So people call it, say, fallen arches. That's the process. And as it gets inflamed and as it becomes problematic, and if it's stretched out too much and it loses its tension, you think of it like on a suspension bridge, like it's like the steel cable that like pulls the suspension bridge up. It pulls when you go on your tiptoe. That's what's pulling the foot bones up. Is that little tendon? That's the one that he's got. I forget what it's called. The tibialis post. I forget. But anyway, that's what he's dealing with now. So. It's not a simple thing. It's not something that's like, oh, you got a little sprain. It's a weird one. And I think it's just rest is what gets it back into shape. But we've seen with Brandon Wright that, you know, 6 weeks turns into 6 months pretty quickly.
Yeah, I didn't realize that was the – I didn't even know what the injury was. I didn't know if it was like a high sprain that they were just being careful with or what. So that makes me feel even worse about it. Thanks, Peter.
Sorry, buddy. Get some more champagne.
You know, guys I'm really excited about, I think Jarrell Martin as a small forward has been really exciting. I don't think that's a way people had been thinking of him, you know, but he's kind of slotted into that 3-4 kind of tweener spot and done really well. He's shooting the ball really well. He's kind of been able to show off his athleticism. I mean, I think It's always the cliche, like, wait till a guy gets a training camp under his belt. But, you know, he missed a lot of time with a broken foot, and it really wiped out his conditioning last year. You know, so what we were seeing of him was not him in peak condition. And I think he's a really good young player. You know, we weren't going to talk about the rest game, but last night Deontay Davis played a lot. And obviously he's still got a long way to go to become a, you know, rotation NBA player. But right now, just watching his instincts on defense, he's got the makings of something really special. None of that really helps this year.
No, that's where we get down to the problem. I agree with you. And I think actually, you know, Deontay Davis is tailor-made to be the big alongside Zach, an aging Zach Randolph. And that gets into the issue, and I wrote about it earlier this week, and you've talked about it a lot too, that, you know, it is so difficult right now. And I have some sympathy for David Fizdale in this regard. You know, you have a guy who is such an icon in Memphis. I mean, Zach Randolph got the grind. You know, he's the godfather of Memphis. Tony Allen's the grandfather. He's the godfather. He's the guy that runs the show. If anyone's going to have a statue built, it's going to be him. I mean, he is really the embodiment of so much of what this Grizzly thing has turned into. And people love the guy for good reason. But he is such a one-way player now. He's still the offense. I mean, his per 36 scoring is better than it's ever been at any point in his career, any year ever this year. So he's killing backup bigs, killing them. But he is himself getting killed on the defensive end. Deontay Davis would be perfect alongside of him because he can make up with his athleticism and shot blocking some of the deficiencies that Zach has. But that's...
You know, the Grizzlies have lacked that rim protector for so long. I mean, they tried to play Kufis in that role, and that's kind of works for him, kind of not. He's okay at it.
But he can block shots, but he's not super-duper athletic right to make up that ground that Zach needs made up.
Exactly. Kufis is not the kind of guy who can kind of put a lid over opposing scores the way that, you know, a guy like an Anthony Davis, like that length, you know, and that's what Davis brings to the table, Deontay Davis brings to the table. And I'm really excited to see what he can be. I hope he gets a chance to develop this year because, you know, I wasn't super high on him coming out of the draft. I thought overpaying a second round pick like that was maybe a risk. But you know, seeing the raw material there to work with, I understand why they did it.
He was a guy that I thought was a lottery level talent, but you know, there were a few reasons why he dropped. You know, his on court demeanor, some injury issues. He does. His eyes are sort of half shut all the time, which is a little weird. He looks like he's sort of squinting in the distance. But the thing with Zach is, so if you're Fizdale, you're trying to bring him off the bench. You know, you even brought him off the bench during the rest game. I mean, to keep him in that same role, and I don't think Zach was necessarily real thrilled with that. You're trying to keep him in that same role, but it's becoming apparent that teams now, whenever Zach's out there, they take Zach's man, they put him in a screen. You know, they run pick and roll, and there's no discernible option for Zach within the framework of the defense that Fizdale wants them to run. So he can either freelance, which sometimes happens and leads to, you know, confusion around the rest of the defense, or he can try to run it as is, but when he hedges out, guys just go around him. Marcus Thornton, he hedged on Marcus Thornton. And Marcus Thornton, who is not the fastest guy in the NBA, he may well be one of the slowest guys in the NBA. Went right around Zach to the basket and got an easy layup look like it was nothing. What do you do? So if you're – how do you work with this problem? You need this guy's offense because they got on the bench. There's nobody. Clearly, these young guys, no one is capable of putting up scoring on any consistent level. What do you do with Zach?
Well, I think clearly you waive James Ennis and you go sign Ryan Hollins.
Dave Yeager's not here.
No, really, though. I mean, we've talked about the Brandon Wright injury, but this is where it kills you, right? Because coming all through the preseason, coming into the start of the regular season, the conversation was, and I heard this from Brandon Wright himself, Zach and I are a unit. I'm out there to cover for him. I'm out there to take the toughest defensive assignment so he can score. I mean, that's exactly – Brandon Wright literally told me those words. You know, that was the plan. And so not having him on the floor – you just kind of have to make do with what's there. And what's there are a bunch of rookies and a bunch of young guys. And it's just not, you're not going to be able to run the defensive scheme that you want to run without a credible rim protection type defender behind Zach Randolph right now, or probably ever again. You know,
so what do you do? Do you just have to try to outscore the other team?
But that's what they're doing. You know, I don't know. It's a problem because unless you're going to throw Davis into more minutes than he's necessarily ready to play right now and be willing to to deal with those growing pains. You don't really have anybody who has the skill set to play behind him other than Marc Gasol, which crushes the pace of your offense that you're trying to run. You know, I mean, it's a really, he's in a bind right now with in terms of what to do with his second unit defense.
It's a little bit of an unsolvable puzzle because every time you move something in, another piece, you know, gets out of the way. You don't have enough pieces. You know, you're trying to solve the jigsaw puzzle and you're missing, you know, four or five pieces, and that's always frustrating. I would
kid who took the Rubik's Cube apart with a screwdriver and just put it back together.
That's the one way to do it. I mean, that's the most obvious way to do it. They don't tell you how. They just solve it. They don't specifically say you have to do the little twisty thing. I admire your ingenuity, Kevin Light. So if that's the case, I mean I'm probably you should, you know, this is why my prediction for wins was a little lower than a lot of people's, because I feel like these problems were going to crop up. There is an inevitable tension between player development and maximizing your win total, as we saw with the rest game. The rest game gave great, invaluable NBA minutes, 26, 27 minutes of real, honest-to-goodness NBA basketball against a good NBA team on the road to a guy like Deontay Davis. All your rookies, Wade Baldwin had a terrible game, but that's okay. He was trying to outdo Chris Dunn, and these things happen, and you presume he'll learn from that. Troy Williams looks like a player, looks like he's a guy that's worthy of a roster spot and has a role to play in the NBA. You would never know that necessarily unless you had a game like that, but in the process you lose by 36 to a team that you may well be competing toward the bottom end of the Western Conference playoff picture for. Is there a way to solve the tension, to give a guy like Deontay Davis meaningful minutes while also acknowledging that it might cost you games and still maintain the kind of push for a win total that is sort of requisite with a $100+ million payroll and fourth highest payroll in the league?
Well, yes and no, right? I mean, I think if you're going to have a year where you have to figure stuff out, the year where Gasol is on a minutes restriction because he's coming off a major injury, where Conley is just trying to see if he can stay healthy for a whole year, and where Chandler Parsons hasn't set foot in a game yet, this would be the year, right? You talk about your $100 million team or whatever, that's $200-300 million tied up in guys who aren't 100%, one of whom's not even playing, you know? So, I mean, not to say that's an excuse, but it's a reason, you know? I mean, I think you have to figure out what else you have in place around these guys, because if that's going to be your core, Parsons, Gasol, Conley going forward, if that's going to be your core, you have to bring some of these young guys along, and they have to be more mature, they have to be better, they have to be your rotation, because Lord knows you're not going to get them anywhere else, right? If they're going to optimize for one of those two things, I would rather see them optimize towards the youth. I think they need to develop these guys. This franchise has been starved of young talent for years. And so we're seeing all these rookies running out here like idiots, and Grizzlies Twitter is going, oh my God, why are we losing this game? But this is what it looks like when you play a bunch of young guys. You remember, like, what is it, 2008, 2009, the last time we had a Grizzlies team with this many young guys playing serious minutes, you know?
But what was the win total of that team?
30, you know? I mean, that was what, O.J. Mayo's rookie year? It was terrible.
It was brutal. I mean, I'm not. Ivoroni, I went back to look at this because their 3-point total in the first three games, that 3-game stretch was the most since that year. Yeah. When he had games, they had a 3-game stretch where they shot 38 threes, they made 38 threes. They shot, you know, 70 some odd.
O.J. Mayo was having 30-point nights as a rookie, you know, but the win total isn't that different from that 2009 year to that 2007, like, Powell broke his foot, everything sucks year, right? And think about how much more fun and how much more interesting one was than the other, right? I think that's what we're in right now. They made the playoffs last year. It made everyone in the building want to go home and, like, you know, put a sack over their head.
It's a very Sylvia Plath kind of deal. Yeah. No, I mean, but you're a movie guy. So if you spend, let's say, you're Hollywood blockbuster, you're a big studio, you're spending $150 million in a budget, you don't spend that on a quirky romantic comedy, which is an interesting thing, and you can find little bits and pieces to enjoy, but you ultimately are not getting, like, some kind of experience. That's the way I feel about this team. Like, they're spending big budget blockbuster money. Now, I mean, again, some of that is tied up for a lot of reasons, and you have to, you know, re-sign your guys and all this. I get all that. I'm not saying they intentionally timed it this way, but it just so happens this is the way that it is. The fans, I mean, judging by their responses to me, and I'm sure to you, and the general public out there, I don't know, apart from Grizzly Twitter, the real, like, niche part of Grizzly Twitter, that enjoys watching young players develop and sees the little detail work and all that stuff. I don't think there's like that big of an appetite for like, boy, I love to watch these young guys get after it. I think that's going to wear pretty thin if they're under 500 in December and January. And we may not be having this discussion if Chandler Parsons comes back and everything's great, but if not,
but wear thin with who? I mean, to me, that's the argument, right? Who cares if it wears thin this year if they're going to be the fourth seed in the West next year? You know, I mean, it's going to be forgotten pretty quickly if they can get where they need to go by spending this year on development and on learning this system, on figuring out how to play this defense. You know, there's a lot of different stuff right now, and you know, to me, and sure, maybe the fans are going to be burning jerseys in the plaza out front if they miss the playoffs or something. But if they win 39 games, but by the end of it, you know who your rotation is going to be next year. You know which young guys you're going to go to war with. You know what I mean? Like, if you know you can have these pieces and be a contender in the West again next year because you spent all this time this year figuring it out, I think that's worth it.
I think that's their view.
I think it is too.
So when you say like it's going to wear thin, well, it's not going to wear thin. I don't think it's going to wear thin with anybody who matters.
Well, but see here, this is where I disagree. I will say, I think a lot of us can get too caught up in our own little bubble of stuff, and you know, the people that have to buy the tickets and pay for it, that still matters. And it's like, you know, when the Grizzlies go and punt a game in Minnesota, I don't know that the Minnesota fans were necessarily buying tickets to watch Mike Conley and Marc Gasol play. But theoretically, there should be a consideration of, like, you are putting out a product that is entertainment-based. That shouldn't define all of your decisions. But it also can't be completely ignored under the rubric of, like, we're going to develop talent, period, into story. I think there will be some more external pressure than some of us want to discuss to accelerate a process that may need a little more time to simmer.
I don't think you're wrong, but I also think, you know, the joke is what the Mike Conley contract was franchise suicide. I think trying to make the five seed in the West this year is franchise suicide. You know, if you're going to go out there and play Mike Conley 36 minutes and you're going to play Marc Gasol 34 minutes and you're going to make Chandler Parsons rush back from injury and play 36 minutes, you know what I mean? Like if you lean too heavy on these guys, they are going to break, and then you have no draft pick, and then you're going to win 20 games next year. You know, I mean, I think they have to be so careful with how they balance the workload that they're putting on these guys this year. We don't know if they'll ever be able to handle a full quote unquote workload again. They may not. None of them may. And so, you know, I don't think it's realistic to demand that they put everything they can into every single game this year, because they may be sacrificing the rest of this year. They may be sacrificing the next 3 years of Marc Gasol's contract. You know what I mean? If his foot starts acting up again, this could all fall apart very easily. They have to tread very lightly here.
Am I right to be a little concerned that the thus far what we have seen of Marc Gasol's minutes restriction, quote unquote, was, well, first of all, you play him in all six preseason games, 20 minutes on average, which, you know, many, many, many over 30 superstars who are not coming off broken feet did not play. LeBron played in like two preseason games, I think. And he seems like he's okay. That's step one. Then step two during the regular season is he's on a minutes restriction on the back end of a back-to-back. He comes to Memphis, 20-minute restriction turns into a 29-minute performance. 9 minutes isn't that big a deal in the scheme of things. But that then, according to David Fizdale, and I asked him about that, and he said, well, you know, one thing leads to the other. They end up sitting him out altogether in a game that maybe he was going to ordinarily play 20 more minutes or whatever. And maybe Mike Conley plays if Mark plays, and maybe it's not quite as obvious a punt in that situation. It just feels to me, Kevin, especially with the comment that one game leads to another, if I overdo it, he said, I'm going to have to get it back a different game. That was his quote. So if that's the case, then are they flying by the seat of their pants here a little bit? Because that certainly seems like they talked all summer about, we're going to have a disciplined approach to this. Mark's rehab was like to the week, like this is what you do, this is what you do, this is what you do, to the point where he was 2 weeks away from making the Olympics, and maybe he could have pushed it. But he said, nope, I'm sticking with the plan. Within a week of the season, we're already kind of off the plan. That worries me.
Yeah, well, I don't know how much of a solid plan there was. You know, it sounds, from Fizdale's comments, it sounds like there's some kind of a minute budget You know, like, you know, like I overspent a little this month, so we've got to not eat out so much next month. I mean, that's kind of what he makes it sound like. But I don't really know what the methodology is there. I mean, I think we have a lot of the members of the media, have a lot of questions to ask about this stuff, because I feel like they have some explaining to do. I mean, the answer is we don't know. We don't know what their approach is until it comes time to release the starting lineup and we see who's in it and we see how much they play. You know, it's not the most forthcoming of franchises in the best of times, and so you know, I think we're going to be left in the dark just as much as everybody else is on it, and it's going to be up to people like us to ask these questions and try to get at what they're doing, because I don't, from watching what they're doing, it seems like they have some sort of a sense of approaching back-to-backs with, you know, rest Conley one night, rest Gasol the other night. That, you know, that
stagger the
like,
rest. That's yeah. What a lot of teams do.
Yeah, but they didn't do that, and then they used it all in the Minnesota game. And so, you know, what are they going to do? I think that's a valid question. I don't know that it's a concern point for me yet, just because it's so early. But and because that I think that's the only 4-5 set of the whole year. So maybe that's a special case. Maybe they decided on the plane on the way there, since it was a 4. You know. We're just going to have to see. I don't think anybody knows.
See, I think there's an inverse proportionality to your appetite for rest versus your feeling on the win total. The more wins you think they'll have, the less appetite you have for rest, and vice versa. If you have more or less said, look, ultimately you think it's pragmatic not even really to worry about the playoffs. If they miss the playoffs, they give up the lottery pick to the Nuggets, so be it. That's just the price you pay for having managed poorly, and you got to go on about your business. It's more important to get the young players minutes.
Only top five protected anyway.
So that's what I'm saying. You're going to the pick's going unless you tank. I mean, you if they were to just – if there's a horrible injury that happens in the early weeks of the season and they're like, look, screw it. We have no chance, and they just hit the tank big time, then maybe they could keep the pick. Even that might be debatable because there's some really bad teams in the NBA, so you may even struggle to get to that point. But that relationship, if you come at it from your approach, then I think people like that have your point of view would say, you know, rest, what are you going to do? But if you are a Grizzly fan that's like – and there were – I did a poll, I think like – I want to say 35% of people thought they're going to win 50 games. If you're one of those people, like, you have no tolerance for that.
And that's insane to me. I think those fans were misled, and I think they're wrong. You know, I think this team is not going to win 50 games. This is not 2012, right? This Zach Randolph and Tony Allen are 35 years old. I'm just sorry. Time passes, pets die, you know, leaves change, whatever. Like, it's just not 2012 anymore. This team is currently constructed. Is not going to be able to run out Mike Conley, Tony Allen, Zach Randolph, Marc Gasol, and win 50 games. That just doesn't work anymore. It's impossible.
Boy, this is why Matt Moore calls you Eeyore. Yeah, this is you just bring in the thundercloud,
which is so funny to me because I'm so excited about this season. This is the most excited I've been about a Grizzly season in years, because there's so much to watch and there's so much to learn about this team and there's so much to learn about how they're going to play together and see how they react to these situations. I mean, you know, I love Zach Randolph as much as the next guy, but I don't really want to watch him ISO 40 minutes a game anymore.
You're done. You're over it, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it's exciting that we get to watch something else.
So now, gun to your head, you say no playoffs.
I think they make like the 7 or 8 seed.
So I'm a no playoff. I was no playoff before.
I've always thought they were going to win like 44 games, 43. Maybe 42, but I think they will have a winning season.
Okay, last thing here. Who's going to be the rookie that will have played the most minutes by the end of the season?
Baldwin.
You're sticking with it no matter what?
I think it's going to be Wade Baldwin. I think he's been awesome.
I think there's an outside chance it could be Davis, just because they're going to look at Zach and say that there's no other way we can play Zach. Yeah. And they may have to just deal. And if Davis can be competent, like if he can just do the rim running, block shots, cover some ground, you're not going to run anything for the guy. Putbacks, all that. I think you may have to use him, especially if Brandon Wright doesn't come back anytime soon. It may get to the point when there's no other way you can play Zach except alongside a guy that's athletic like him.
Yeah, and I think that's a valid argument. I don't think that's crazy by any stretch. I just think Baldwin's going to get a lot of minutes with Conley. I think we're going to see him featured on the offense a lot.
The other X factor is I think there's a real good chance that Chalmers comes back, which then eats into those minutes.
Right.
That's But we'll see. Kevin Leip, you are going to be tweeting constantly. Now, what's your schedule? Give people your schedule, because you do a podcast of your own. You're writing after every game. You're doing so. Give me like the rundown. And I'm the official Limerick guy. You've got the haikus. I'm going to throw a Limerick every now and then. I hope that's okay with you. Tell people what you got.
Well, I'm doing a haiku for every game this year. I've not posted my Minnesota haiku yet, but it's coming. Beyond the Arc podcast comes out usually late Mondays. We didn't do one this week because I had a migraine. It was just bad timing. But, those are every Monday. I've got stuff up at memphisflyer.com all the time on the Beyond the Arc blog. The podcast is on iTunes. It's also on the Memphis Flyer website. You can find me on Twitter at FlyerGrizzBlog with 1Z, the way God intended. This is a real bring me your hate kind of locked on Grizz here.
Listen, I'm with you. I am a 1Z, inveterate 1Z guy, and I will say this.
It saves a character on Twitter. Like, to me, that's the – there are two reasons I have 1Z. It's, number one, it saves a character on Twitter. Number two, it makes people mad, and I think it's hilarious that it makes people mad.
You've got a real heel wrestler approach, which I vibe with, and I'm on board with. I'll tell you, as a corollary to this, I also get very irritated by the 2Z Fizz. When his name only has 1Z, there's no reason for that. We're turning this thing, it's like the Grind City stuff, we're turning this all into like a big marketing spiel. He's the coach with a trademark name, and just what are, come on, man, just can we not call him Fizdale, and just do we have to have everything be a trademark deal?
Everything, even this podcast, is content marketing.
That's true. But it's 1Z content marketing. That's right. Kevin, thank you. I appreciate it. And I look forward to seeing the hate that you receive as a result of all of your opinions this season.
Good. Bring it. Bring it up.
Bring it, says the man. That's Kevin Leip. I appreciate you guys joining me for this very special interview edition of Locked On Grizzlies. You can subscribe if you happen to cross this thing and you want to subscribe to it, do it. We do it every day, Monday through Friday. It drops overnight sometime, depending on when I can get it up and so to speak. See, this is what happens on these podcasts, Kevin. So depending on that is when we'll go ahead and get the podcast going. But in the meantime, thank you very much for listening. Subscribe and rate, and we'll chat again soon.
Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.